Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Oh, hello there, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome. It's Wednesday night here on Fightful.com, FightfulWrestling.com, YouTube.com/Fightful. So you know what that means, to steal a line from someone who tweets the same thing every day on Twitter. It is the Wednesday Night Wars podcast right here for you all. I'm Mr. Warren Hayes, and we are going to be chatting this evening of in regards to professional wrestling, of course, but particularly on NXT and AEW. Dynamite, which happened this evening in fantastic fashion. It's an exciting evening. Ready to talk about it with these two guys right here. First and foremost, we have one of the writers here at Fightful who is joining us now on Wednesday nights as a regular member, Robert the Dude DeFelice. Good to see you, Robert. Welcome again this evening. How you doing?
It's good to see you. I'm a little caught off guard. I thought we were talking about the debate. I prepared for something completely different.
Oh, you know what? I've been told that someone is dodging questions and the other one is wearing Converse sneakers. I think that's all we need to know at this point.
That might be true.
Also joining us tonight is a man that needs no introduction. However, I will give him one nonetheless, because otherwise it'd be really awkward. Alex Pawlowski, you probably know him from Fightful Select's Sour Graps reviews of Raw and SmackDown that he does twice a week to talk about both shows individually, because they deserve their own reviews. Each of them deserve their own reviews. But Alex also joins us every Wednesday night. How you doing, Alex?
I am great, because I found a song tonight that is guaranteed to pick me up and lift my spirits every time I hear it. And every time I hear it is constantly, because it will not leave my brain. And that song, I believe, is entitled Friendship. It is the new theme song for Killian Dane and Drake Maverick. And it has lifted my spirits in a time when basically the entire world is on fire. And so now I have something just to like run through my brain when I'm like laying in a drug-induced coma later tonight. It'll be a lot of fun.
It'll be delightful. I mean, you know, you have to, you do your best to work with what you have, right?
It's so true.
Which is,
so,
you know, I guess it's the world, right? Or at least Killian Dane and Drake Maverick is a metaphor for what's happening in the world right now to a certain extent.
To a certain extent.
So, I think they are the model that the world needs to follow, is really what's happening here.
Well, you know, yes. they're making do is my point, guys. They're making do with what they have. Listen, if you want to make do with your love of Fightful and everything that we do here, there's a couple of things you can do to show some support. First and foremost, you can like this video right here. That's the easiest way, and it really does help a lot. So if you're watching live right now, you want to do that, go right ahead. That's fantastic. Share the link out into the world. That's even more fantastic. Of course, another way to show some support is to join the FightfulSelect.com service. It's Fightful subscription service where when you jump into that and you become a member, you get tons of extra content. On top of everything that Fightful already brings you, you get Sean Ross Sapp, who does the weekly backstage report. You have Steven Jensen, who reports on everything non-WWE related. You have a Q&A session that Sean runs as well, and he answers thousands of questions. Or at least at this point, he's accumulated thousands of questions answered. And you can get those in if you're a subscriber as well. You get extra content from Listen, Your Boy. And as I mentioned, you get Alex Pawlowski telling everything that's good and right about Raw and SmackDown on a weekly basis. So, of course, you want all of that with Sour Graps. It's a great, great way, probably the best way to show your support for Fightful. Head on over there, FightfulSelect.com. And another way that you can show some support for what we do. If you're here live and you feel like it, you drop us a super chat and I will read your question and or comment live on the air, such as the one left us Evan Wright left us. Thank you very much, Evan, for the super chat. He says, just wanted to see that Robert, Alex, and Warren all rule. Or I guess he wanted to say, just wanted to say that Robert, Alex, and Warren all rule. Also believe AEW ruled Tanahashi on my TSN TV station. I lost it. Will Hobbs is so great. Evan is pumped. Clearly, there was a lot of stuff happening tonight. Okay, but before we get into it all, who won tonight, dude Felice? Who won? AEW or NXT tonight?
So I think from a match standpoint,
usually it's just one.
I'd have to go AEW.
We just AEW. Okay, we don't necessarily have to get into the nitty gritty. AEW. Alex, what about you?
I don't know if you can hear that. That's me whistling. It's in my head forever. I think I might be dying. My brain is just ecstatic with happiness. I'm going to be whistling that all night and maybe closer to the mic this time. NXT won.
All right. Well, since it comes down to me to break the tie, I'm going to declare that AEW won the evening tonight for the 30 years of Christopher Jericho. What a big event it was. We had a bunch of people that sent in congratulations to Chris Jericho all throughout the evening. Of course, it started off with the heels and the baby faces in AEW paying respects to Jericho, the heels being much more complimentary than the baby faces were. You know, there were some very nice passive-aggressive comments, such as Jungle Boy, you know, saying, well, I met him and I almost beat him in the ring. You know, I like that kind of stuff. But then we had a cavalcade of stars, like Slash from Guns N' Roses, Dennis Miller, Ted Irvine, his dad, of course. We had
Paul Stanley.
What's that?
I saw Paul Stanley.
Paul Stanley was there as well. Shaq, when I saw Shaq, I was wondering, what? Is he selling me a printer? Is he selling me pizza? Is he selling me icy hot for my back? I didn't know exactly what he was coming in for. Don Callis was there. Lars Ulrich from Metallica. Kevin Smith. Eli Roth. Gabriel Iglesias. And Paul Stanley, as you said. The tip top, though, was Steel Panther. But, wow. I mean, both of them were there. And they were Steel Panther right there. And, of course, we had other wrestlers. Bully Ray. Lance Storm. Pretty cool, though. Ultimo Dragon and Hiroshi Tanahashi. By God, as if we needed more speculation, as if AEW, whether AEW and New Japan are going to work together. I thought this was fun. Robert, nice little way to commemorate the event. And it makes you realize Chris Jericho gets around. He knows a lot of people.
Yeah, this was better than the match they did to celebrate 30 years of Jericho. Tanahashi being on TV was cool. It's just the beginning to plant the seeds. But I think for me, the takeaway appearance was definitely Steel Panther. Dolph Ziggler looks great. I don't know what he's doing, but he looks fantastic. Hasn't aged a day. And it was good to see him on AEW.
That's very good. Like I said, we had a bit of those throughout the evening, but our first match actually was Brian Cage versus Will Hobbs for the FTW title. It was the first defense in 21 years, a commentary was telling us. And as, JR asks Taz, tell us about the title that you created, Taz, 21 years ago. And Taz says, well, it's an anti-establishment title. It's a lifestyle, he tells us, Robert.
Okay.
It's
a lifestyle. Basically says, God, my promoter doesn't pay me money. Hopefully that's not the case with Tony Khan and Brian Cage. First of all, they're wrong because he did defend the title, I think, a couple weeks ago on Dark. So the first time in 21 years, it's a bit weird.
Was it a defense?
Yes, okay. It was against Brian Pillman Jr.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a weird miss for them. But this match was awesome. Will Hobbs is great. And I would not have been surprised to see him actually win the title here.
This was actually, I really liked this match. You know, at first, of course, they were slugging it out. You know, and to me, looking at both these guys, it's more like that. It's more than two big meaty meat men. You know, these were two very strong guys, and there was a lot of this. There was a lot of showing off, showing off their strengths. You know, we saw power bombs and a pump handled face buster by Brian Cage, and which throttled me. I thought that was amazing. But at the same time, you also see Brian Cage pulling off standing moonsaults, and you're like, okay, well, really,
right?
There's nothing this
he really do. Is maybe the ultimate pro wrestler at times.
Yeah, at times he has these moments of just like of complete brilliance where you think you've got this, you think you've had it, you have him figured out, excuse me, but then he pulls off some great stuff. The last will and testament, which is Will Hobbs' spine buster, is avoided, but is followed by a power bomb. It's a shame I find that they named the power bomb, the spine buster move, as a finisher, but they have Brian Cage kick out of it. You know, okay, I get it. So it won't be the most protected finisher in AEW, but at the same time, you know, it is such a great spine buster. At the same time, you sort of want to give it some gravitas.
The problem is they booked themselves into a corner because they have to protect Cage to a degree because he came in, lost immediately to Mox. So they need to build good credit with him. But that's the problem when you're a fresh company. You know, you're going to run into these situations where you're kind of in a hole and somebody's going to have to lose, and it's not always going to be the best move.
Well, I think that they can do a lot with Will Hobbs where they can build him as a guy who came in. It was a hot up and comer, super strong, but like lost Brian Cage, and then he could win a couple matches, and you know, like you could build back up. He doesn't have to win his first match in order to be considered strong. And you're right about the spine buster. I'm wondering if he's got another thing he could pull out the next time to win a match with that's not the spine buster, and his spine buster becomes a signature move as opposed to a finish.
Well, he also does a frog splash, which is a thing to behold nonetheless, because he's well, he's not
there. You go. I think they want the thing to behold to be his finisher.
It is a thing to behold, but you know, at the end of the day, he's doing that spine buster like nobody's business. And even though we did see the inventor of the move hit it tonight, I think that might be one of the best going today.
And you know, just to circle back around real quick, you know, if they book themselves into a corner and they need to build some credit for Brian Cage, which I completely understand, just don't have Will Hobbs hit his move. That's all.
Yeah, I agree with that.
That's all I have to do. But hey, the drill claw, which is Hobbs's move, puts Hobbs away for the match. Cage's move puts Hobbs away, and Cage walks away, retaining his title. After the match, Taz offers Hobbs a choice. Option A, to join Team Taz. Option B, get the hell beat out of him. And before anything happens, Darby Allin coming out with his skateboard as if he's skipping six period to go smoke, to sneak out to smoke a bit, runs in to run Team Taz away. What'd you think of the finishing angle, Robbie? Because clearly you liked the match, and I agree, it was a good one. What do you think about the
match? Was good, and I gotta believe this is a slow burn for Will Hobbs to accept the offer and join Team Taz. I think Hobbs and Cage seem more akin to Taz than Ricky Starks. Mm-hmm. I think Starks is just there to have somebody to take the pin, and that's not the best role for him because he's one of the best in the world right now. You know?
Yeah, I agree.
So I think this might lead to some more money and more character definition for Will Hobbs.
Well, it's always good to see him on TV. Plus, he's an indie darling right now. The fans really, really like him. So,
yes,
even though he's not indie, he's signed. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? We have Lance Archer cutting a promo, or at least having a vignette to hype his match. His world title match with John Moxley next week. And then a little later on, we have John Moxley. Hey, having a drink in a bar, but the bar is completely empty. I mean, if you're going to go have a whiskey somewhere in a bar, this is the way to do it as far as social distancing goes.
That's right. Moxley's a responsible champion. He's lived with the COVID, so he knows.
He absolutely knows. By the way, I'm going to... Evan Wright left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Evan. He says, Excalibur telling Will Hobbs' story and the story of his brother on commentary was really good. Thought commentary was good tonight. I did think that commentary was particularly on point this evening, and I thought it was a little messy at first because you do have five people on commentary, yeah. And they're all trying to get their words in, but overall, I thought commentary did a good job tonight.
Yeah, I think commentary with AEW is a bit of a sore spot because sometimes, you know, JR kind of goes off the rails. And again, you started the night with Taz and Starks and Tony on commentary with him. But for the most part, it was good tonight. And when everybody's on, there's maybe not a better team.
I agree. FTR defeated the Hybrid 2 in a 20-minute Brush with Greatness title match. However, the Hybrid started off in control, using their speed to take over Cash and Dax. FTR scrambled to get back into the pace. They catch a splash to the floor and double-team Evans with a dragon screw leg whip off the top turnbuckle. And that's basically the story of the match here. The FTR guys working on Evans's knee. Dax even crushes it over the barricade on the floor. And Helico eventually gets a hot tag where he starts wrapping Dax and Cash in a double submission on the floor. There's some good back and forth until FTR get back in control and they share German suplexes with each other into a matchbook cover, which was really cool. I thought it was a great double team spot. Evans completely whiffs a top rope spinning move, but it's the superplex splash combo off the top rope that gets the job done with for FTR. Commentary underscoring that this might be for the Young Bucks, that it was a little nudge to the Young Bucks. Before we get into the post-match angles, Robert, how do you feel about the match?
Match was fun. Hybrid 2 don't get a lot of time to shine, so this felt special. I think it was Excalibur putting over, well, they won three times on Dark, and that means something. So it meant a lot for them to be able to get the TV time. I know Jack Evans just tweeted about it, how Angelico feels he's ready, but maybe Evans not so much. Maybe that played into the factor of who was selling and who was taking the hot tag. The Powerplex is always a good finish. I loved it when I first saw it back on tapes of Power and Glory. I think FTR does it really well. The Young Bucks don't know how to watch TV. Matt Jackson was watching it kind of backwards, but that's...
They were doing the WWE
thing.
There you
go.
Well, they make them stand sideways from the TV.
But they took it, and then they said, okay, we're even going to overdo that. And Matt Jackson just watched it backwards. A great little dig at WWE. But I thought it was a good match. FTR can't have a bad match, as far as I'm concerned.
This is how I'm going to do the podcast for the rest of the evening, right here.
No, but then you got to look like that.
Like this. Like that.
Yeah.
So, after the match, we see the Young Bucks. Well, we saw the Young Bucks watching the match throughout the proceedings. And after the match, they super kicked the cameraman. Again, just before we move a little further into the angle, the other post-match angle... I think it's time for this storyline to develop a little more, Robert. I don't know what you think, but I get it. The Young Bucks are mad for some reason, and they're mad at officials and non-wrestlers. I think it's time for us to get a little more meat around this bone.
See, that's the thing. You say you get it. I don't get it. Why are you mad? You've lost all of your opportunities. You yourself have failed yourself. I mean, if you're going to tell a story about another member of the Elite projecting, they're really doing a good job of making themselves look like a team of crybabies. All they seem to do is project their shortcomings. I don't know if that's necessarily the best thing you want from your baby faces, but be that as it may, it's so clear this will be the Full Gear match, maybe the main event. But by next week, we need to know where they're going with this.
Yeah, because it's been a while. Like Alex often likes to talk about WWE storytelling, where you go from point A to point B, but then you stay on point B for weeks and weeks and weeks. and WWE likes to tell us, no, no, the storyline's advancing, but no, we're still at the same place. We've been at the same place with the Young Bucks story for the past 3 weeks right now. So I'm good with something happening just to give us some development here. And then finally, we get a graphic of FTR in hot dog suits.
Get it? They're weenies.
Because, yes, because comedy backyard wrestlers extraordinaire, the best friends, come out to explain that they're weenies. But most importantly, to challenge FTR to a match next week at the anniversary show for their a title match. They trade some fisticuffs at the end, but FTR bail. What'd you think about the final angle for this segment?
So it sucks that they're blowing that match really quickly, but I guess you can't hold off on the Young Bucks match any longer. Best friends look great after the parking lot brawl, and now it seems like they might get another quick shot and then lose, yeah, and then back of the line. I don't know. I'm not sure that's the way to go with them either, but they're working with the best they can under these conditions, and at least we know it'll be a damn good match.
And the thing is, and I agree with you, because I think best friends are doing some... They probably... Look, I think they might be Tag Team of the Year in AEW because they have done so much. They've been up and down. They've done every role, and they've had nothing from good to great matches. This is my opinion so far. You know, FTR, not a problem. They've had they've had some good matches as well. Of course, they haven't been around in AEW as much as best friends have. They've been consistent throughout the entire year. So, yeah, I think they're coming off real, real strong from the parking lot brawl. It's a shame that they may be that this might turn out to be a soft defense for FTR. You know what I mean?
I think I would call them the most consistent act in the tag team division in AEW. But yeah, it does suck that they are now the stopgap between FTR and the match everybody really wants to see, because at some point you're going to put the belt on Trent and Chucky and it's going to be a big moment. But let's hope they don't sour that moment by having too many missed opportunities with them for the tag team titles already.
Keith Kutak left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Keith. Hope I didn't mangle your last name too hard. Says that, can y'all see Starks being pushed away from Team Taz eventually? Cage or even Taz to be the one to sell him out and get him on his singles run. What do you think, Robert?
Long term, yes. I hope that's not an angle they move too quickly. I worry that the inclusion of a guy who fits more of the dynamic of Team Taz might rush that angle, and we don't need that. You know, I think AEW's biggest problem is they rush to too many of the good things and maybe stall on too many of the things that don't need it, and that would be an example of that.
And I also think that Taz and Ricky Starks have some very natural chemistry. If you listen to their commentary on Dark together, I think they really are a very good match for one another. I think it works for now. I you know, eventually I think everyone can split up except for the New Day, but I agree with Robert. Let's give it some loose before we start talking about splitting up. Remember, folks, give us a like, share out the tweet, the link here. If you're enjoying what's going on here, the super chats are still open, just like the one I read. We have MJF,
yeah,
as well, talking about his first meeting with Chris Jericho and how Jericho gave him some advice at the time, reminiscing back then, continuing their little frenemy angle that they have going. But we'll talk about that a little later on. At the end of the main event, because now we have to talk about Cody Rhodes defeating Brody Lee to regain the TNT championship in a dog collar match, which can be defined by the word blood. Everyone bladed. Even people who weren't involved in the match bladed. Cody, of course, comes to the ring with Coach Arn and Brandy. Lee comes out with Anna Jay and John Silver. And they give it the big match feel. Like, they, you know, they really put over the fact how dangerous this match was, Robert. You know, introducing Doc Samson, you know, ringside medical official or doctor. They probably use the word doctor as opposed to medical anything. You know, they just probably go right into that. They also point out that Greg Valentine is in the audience, who had that legendary and extremely brutal and at some points very, very hard to watch dog collar match versus Roddy Piper in 1983. They mentioned it a couple of times. Oh, yeah. Folks, if you've never seen it, I'm for sure you can find it easily out there. And oh boy, there's a reason why they wanted to lean into that. I like the idea that they gave it this big match feel to it, Robert. What'd you think?
This should have been the main event match. Mm-hmm. I get that you wanted the bit, and I'm skipping ahead here, of the end credits all saying Chris Jericho, but like, this should have been the match that closed the show. Even if you had to do the corny lights out gimmick to have this match at the end, this should have closed the show. Cody bleeds too much in every match for me. Like, it's just egregious at this point. Like, we get it. You like the NWA. You want to bleed every time you wrestle. I get it. You know, it's like, I get it. He misses his dad, and that's touching to a degree, but man, slow it down. You don't need to bleed all the time. By the way, there is a pandemic going on, and I feel like we need to address that when we see so much blood just all over the place.
Yeah, the whole, like, hey, could you get your blood in my blood, and then let's get it all over everything? Wouldn't that be a good thing to do, you know, during right now when everybody's might be dying?
Hey, Brody, you want to, like, taste my blood, kind of, sort of, for the camera, you know? Like,
you know, if I started cutting myself because I miss my dad, they'd probably send me to a therapist. I'm just saying, you know.
But when you do it on TV.
Oh, when you do it on
you're
TV.
You're a star.
Yeah, exactly. No, of course I'm
you're
kidding.
You're a star,
right?
Sir.
But, hey, this was something else, wasn't it, though? And I mean, and I agree. I think, just before we get into the match, I kind of agree. Cody likes to blade a lot. Like you said, he likes his Southern style wrestling. This is the thing. This is part of the stuff that he wants to bring back. He wants to bring back the grittiness and the violence of it. But damn, man, if you do it every match, it just loses a lot of its potency, of its drama. And that's one of the reasons, why people got fed up with or started cringing when they started seeing too many blade jobs, because it's like, oh, okay, we're bleeding again. And that's, I think he could skip for a while, like really wait to a really big time match before doing it again.
I would agree. It was very appropriate here, added to the match for sure. But now, well, let's not do it for another 3 weeks to a month, you know?
We could stretch it out even a little longer than that. Make it
even a little more, but I'm thinking they got a pay-per-view in a month. Yeah, you know? Let's at least wait till the pay-per-view.
Make us miss it. Make us miss it before bringing it back. The Jam 1 Ryan B. Jam left us a super chat. Thank you very much. The Jam 1 Ryan B. Jam said the dog collar match felt like a pay-per-view. What's wrong with me tonight? This felt like a pay-per-view quality match. It was fantastic. Yeah. It was early on. Brody Lee showing off his strength. Cody is trying to get one up on him, but he can't. Cody goes for a springboard cutter, but Lee yanks him off the top rope, which was really cool. You have John Silver blading on the outside.
Immediately.
And Lee sits him down in a chair. He's like, sit down, take a load off. But then Cody drop kicks him. Of course, like, and that's the thing, we've talked about this. If you don't watch BTE and you don't understand the relationship between Lee and Silver and Silver's role within the Dark Order, I'm pretty sure this wasn't half as funny as it was if you do watch it. Lee DDT Cody's on the chain, and that gets Cody to blade. And Brody, man, he's just pummeling him. He is absolutely pummeling him. They brawl onto the floor. Lee uses the chains to ram Cody into the barricades. He sets up a table that ends up being a spot that happens during the commercial, mind you.
Gotta get that picture.
But I mean, Jesus, man, he package pile drives Brody Lee off the apron through the table, and that happens in PNP. That kind of, that blows my mind.
They got to make sure they're always watching. I think that's a bad habit that modern content creators have. It's just, no, I got to keep you always watching. When you know, like, if on the other side of the picture, it's a cricket commercial, I'm not going to be paying attention.
Back in the ring, well, the Brody Lee bleeds as well after this spot here. So everyone is bleeding. And by God, Brody bleeds. I mean, he's channeling Bruiser Brody at this point in his look with the blood and the way that he's fighting. It's ridiculous. So back in the ring, Cody starts whipping Lee with the chain. Arn gets involved because when Lee chucks a chair at Arn, Arn gets pissed off. He enters the ring. Alex Reynolds tries to do a run-in on Arn, but he gets spine-bustered by Anderson. Then Lee punks out Arn. Cody fights back. Moonsaults off the top rope. He hits a crossroads. Brody Lee kicks out at one. There's a superplex. Cody avoids the discus clothesline, hits the final cut, wraps the chain around Brody Lee's face in a hell of a visual, I'll give you that much. Then hits another crossroads for the win. The Dark Order come out, and there they are in complete disbelief, as I was to a degree.
Myself as well.
What do you think of the, so give us some, so wrap up your thoughts on the match here, man.
So I like the visual with the chain in the face and they're grimacing through the blood. I thought it was a really cool spot where Cody used the chain to kind of hit an off the apron cutter. Again, that package pile driver, great spot, but should have been on TV. Yeah. Maybe they weren't aware that they were in picture in picture. That's maybe not their fault. Really odd championship change here. It felt like you were just starting to get there with Brody and you're cutting it off again. I don't know if people care going forward. He's lost to Moxley. Now he had the big run and he's already lost it back to Cody. I get that Cody had to go do the big show or the
go big
what,
show.
What is that? The go big show. But like,
cause I hopefully I Cody didn't have to go off to do the big show. Cause I'm sorry.
Yeah. That would be very awkward in another way, but you know, big show's kind of lonely right now. Next big show got canceled. But you know, I thought it was really good. I didn't like the post-show promo or the post-match promo because he's talking like, again, it's a dusty callback. It's the, I want to reach across the aisle and feel the energy from you people. It's like, Cody, okay, I know you're excited that there's live audiences back and you can say this, but it's not the first time you've won anything. And it's certainly not the biggest crowd you've won anything in front of. I get the message, but it fell flat for me. It felt more like fan service to the old school NWA stuff. And I'm going to go a step further with that and say the next match is a cage match. I quit, a la Magnum TA, Tully Blanchard at the pay-per-view. Cage, I quit, Brody and Cody Rhodes.
Well, okay. Well, that's a hell of a prediction. You know, I don't mind the throwbacks because I think this is one thing that AEW does really, really well. Being able to juggle the old school type of wrestling, started to bring back the jaded fan who misses that type of stuff with very newfangled new ways of wrestling, as some people like to call it, the flippy shit, you know. But I think they're good. They're very good at reaching out to very different niches within a niche, which is professional wrestling. That being said, I agree with you. In fact, I'll tell you, I've heard this Cody promo before, and you know, and I get it. He's intense. He's the guy who will. He speaks from the heart. You can't take anything away from that. But we've heard this promo before, and it didn't seem that big. And the cynical side of me wants to. You know, I don't like to be too overtly cynical, but the cynical guy in me says, "Oh, so Cody goes off for a month or so to shoot a show, and he comes back and he takes his title back." Huh, okay. Yeah, it feels a little strange.
Now, I don't want to get too cynical either. Don't want to step on Alex's gimmick, but it's okay, Warren, because, you know, he can't challenge for the world title because he made that rule because he's aware of the stigma, but he's going to take this title and make it his. completely, always, forever. That's what it looks like to me right now.
Evan Wright left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Evan. He says, I'm going to need to disagree about this main eventing. Talking about this match here, Debate was going to tank their viewership anyways. Feels like you need to put this at 9 to keep people. Not a bad analysis, I'd say. But, you know, as far as, you know, if you put this in a bubble, in and about itself, with the outside world not looking in, it is kind of weird that this didn't finish. The show.
That's fair, and the logic probably was due to the debate, but I think main event to main event, NXT was much stronger. What this ran against was, you know, very weak. I think AEW could have kept them regardless, so I really would have kept this towards the end. But we still had more with Cody after he did the babyface promo.
Keith K left us a super chat, and I can call him Keith K now because he says in his super chat, you can just say Keith K, LOL, that's cool. Thank you, Keith K. Thanks for responding to my super chat. Well, thank you for the super chat, and thank you for the second one as well. Where do you think Brody goes from here? A third with Cody or move on? Well, Robert does think that that we're getting something else, and I have a tendency to agree.
Yeah, I'm definitely going Cage, I quit. Or maybe one of the two, but I think they just go all the way Starrcade 85. And then after that, I don't know. I think you got to keep Brody strong somehow, or you got to put him in the tag division. I don't know.
We had an announcement for 3 more contestants in the AEW World Championship, number one contendership championship title tournament.
Yeah, something like that. That sounds about right.
We got 3 more three more participants. Joining Jungle Boy, Ray Phoenix and Kenny Omega will be Wardlow, Colt Cabana, and the big reveal, Hangman Page. Immediately we get Alex Marvez interviewing Kenny Omega backstage. Omega saying that is very confident. He's going to win this. He's going to challenge whoever's going to hold the title at the end of the pay-per-view. And he even takes a slight dig, calling Hangman Page a tag team wrestler who has an interest in this singles title. And I thought that was some mwah, chef's kiss, cordon bleu shade, Robert. What do you think of these new entrants here and the entrance of Hangman Page into the fray?
Well, that was a given. They could have announced it last week and it would have been okay. That was obvious once he found out Kenny was in the tournament. That's got to be your final. It should be your final.
Do you think it telegraphs it a little too much?
Maybe a little too much. Maybe it telegraphs so much that they just don't even get that far into it. But Wardlow is good. He needs more of a chance to shine. And, you know, obviously Hangman Page was going to be a main player in AEW always. And Colt Cabana is former NWA World Champion, former NWA National Champion. He can wrestle when he feels like it, and he's one of the best in the world when he feels like it. So this was good as far as the promo. Man, it goes back to what I said earlier. More projecting from those elite baby faces. I've never seen just such a group of just, God, they're almost like high school children. I don't know what to do with them sometimes, you know? Maybe 2 BTE for their television show. You know what I mean?
Oh, I see what you mean. Evan Wright left us a super chat again. Thank you very much, Evan. Once again, he says, Kenny alluding to the G1 was amazing. Lots of New Japan tonight on AEW. Yeah, well, it's hard to not consider to think about Kenny Omega's career without weighing heavily into what he did in New Japan. That's what made him a superstar. But yes, I am.
It definitely was.
I am glad
and,
that.
You know, I think. Go ahead. We just got the news about Harold Maid not being the president anymore, and they're running with that. Will they, won't they? Immediately. But Kenny Omega, tournament wrestler, he's got to go to the finals. Whether or not Hangman makes it, I don't know, but Kenny has to go all the way.
It's something that people have been clamoring for a while, and I think a lot of us have been patient. We want to see some singles action from Kenny Omega. Big Swole defeated Serena Deeb. This was a solid little match they had here. Lots of back and forth. Deeb picks Swole apart, and she looked great. Some great technical work, some great groundwork in control for most of the match until Swole hits a back elbow and a headbutt. There's a little more back and forth that ends with another headbutt and dirty dancing by Big Swole for the win. I don't have any other word to say than solid. This was another good showing from the AEW women's division.
Yeah.
2 weeks in a row.
Not much needs to be said here. It's exactly what it needed to be. And hopefully this starts a good trajectory for a division that has been widely criticized and rightfully so.
Oh, we had a solid match last week with Britt and Velvet Sky. We have another one here that's very good.
Red Velvet. Velvet Sky. Not Velvet Sky.
Oh, wow. Excuse me. I use the words good match and Velvet Sky in the same sentence. I apologize.
You would have remembered if it was Velvet Sky because Taz would have been on commentary saying let the pigeons loose.
Good point. But basically my point here is that we had two very solid women's matches in a row. So good. Let's hope that keeps up. Main event time, Chaos Project were defeated by Jake Hager and Chris Jericho. Of course, Hager and Jericho come out with the Inner Circle. I mean, I don't know how much we need to talk about the match in and about itself. Commentary did their best to really put over the fact that Jericho and Luther have all this really rich, deep history with each other. While they have fought in the past. Let's just call it that. It's like suddenly in 20 years, people will start talking about this really, really, really rich, deep history between Yujiro Takahashi and Kazuchika Okada, you know? I mean, it's fine. Serpentico uses his quickness as much as he can until Jericho clotheslines him down. Luther comes in and they go at it. Jericho hits a lion salt. Luther sentons off the top rope to the floor. He also does a top rope, I guess a bulldog, a two-fisted bulldog onto Jericho off the top rope. Man, every time Luther climbs up on the top ropes, he seems unsteady and wobbly. It's kind of scary.
I don't want to knock him too much, but it seems like this is the first time he's been in a match that went past 5 to 7 minutes, maybe. They did a spot where Sammy tossed in the bat and Luther caught it and hit Jericho. And I thought that might be the end. And there was this weird, he hits the ropes barely and like stops midway and kind of kicks Jericho. It was just very weird. It seems like for a guy who's been in the company for a year and constantly wrestling on Dark, he's not there. I mean, obviously the history is there between them. They started in Canada together, but this is indulgence on the part of Chris Jericho. Just throwing a bone to his buddy, and it's fine for what it is, but I don't need to see it ever again. I'll be honest and say I was looking over at the left side of my screen because what Ember Moon and Rhea Ripley were doing was far, far more entertaining than what was happening on AEW.
After the match, because of course the Judas Effect wins the match for Hager and Jericho, who are still undefeated as a tag team. After the match, Jericho thanks all the fans for 30 years in the business, but gets interrupted by MJF's music. But MJF comes out and says, no, cut the music. This isn't about me. And yet he comes out with Wardlow and someone under a sheet. MJF says he wants to be a part of the celebration and is bringing a gift for the champion. And and Wardlow removes the sheet, only to reveal that it's Clownico the Clown.
Mm-hmm.
Who has another present for Chris Jericho, which he unwraps to reveal a framed portrait of MJF. Jericho sort of looks at it and cracks it over Clownico's head, saying that he hates clowns and tells him very menacingly, him being MJF, don't ever interrupt me again. They stare each other down, but
you're my buddy.
Gotcha. They're just ragging on each other. And then they do a Saturday Night Live-esque cast outing where all the heels hit the ring. They hug, they cheer. The credits for the end of the show have nothing but Chris Jericho on it.
Yeah.
There you go.
Sure did. I think the money here is that MJF has an announcement next week.
Yes.
That he wants Jericho there for. We know that MJF wants a stable of some kind. Will it just be the entire Inner Circle and they just boot out Jericho? I don't know, but this sucked. I mean, really, the show could have ended with Cody and Brody and left a far better impression. Clownico was dumb. They could have gotten a better framed portrait of MJF. It just seemed very lazy, and I think they could have done more for 30 years of Jericho.
I think so, too. I think it was, you know, I don't like it. I'm going to call a spade, I don't like it when WWE ends their shows with a segment and not a match. That's the same thing here. I don't like going out on a main event segment as opposed to a match. I don't think it was that good an angle. I thought it was a little too corny. But hey. It doesn't happen often that AEW has a misstep like this. Otherwise, this was a very solid show. Anakin left us a super chat. Thank you very much again, Anakin. Says, I know it was never going to happen, but imagine if Kevin Owens had shown up in a video reminding Chris Jericho of the Festival of Friendship. Well, it probably could have happened if WWE had kept Cameo up.
I know.
Jericho could have just bought it, right?
They could have easily done that. But, you know, now he's going to have to pay rights fees to WWE, and he's certainly not doing that. Maybe it could have been a give back. Like, you know, Steen gives Cody the package pile driver for the night. They get to use his face. There you go. It could have been a give back.
Aaron Entertainment left us a super chat as well. Thank you very much. Says, what do you think the plans are with Jericho and MJF? I kind of feel like I feel like we're heading into full gear with this.
I would think so. Whether it's a one-on-one we know it won't be a tag because Wardlow's in the tournament. So maybe just one-on-one between those two. And maybe there's a faction war. I don't know.
Yeah.
I definitely think it's a singles match. And Jericho's full babyface with the crowd singing Judas. And that's a very babyface move. I think for the most part, the crowd loves Jericho. This could be the time.
I think Jericho has that Adam Cole energy, you know, where he's supposed to be a heel, yes, but people still cheer for him, you know, kind of thing.
I think there's a potential of there being like an NWO white and NWO red with a split of the Inner Circle, some of them following MJF, and you could get that kind of a thing. It's a very old school type of thing to have a faction split. And then you don't know which one to root for, whatever. Guys go back and forth. Oh, there's a mole in Inner Circle Red. Who's the mole?
It's Horace Hogan.
Be a lot of fun like
it's
that.
Horace Hogan. Maybe,
absolutely. That's exactly who I was thinking.
Keith K. left us a super chat again. Thank you very much, Keith. He says, what is your take on Chris Statlander? Do you think she'll come back strong and shoot to the top? She was a top contender for the title before her knee took her out. I think she can come back real strong. Go ahead, Robert.
I think she got lucky. I mean, getting to go back to your home planet right before COVID. I mean, really, she clearly won. You know, she clearly won. So what I would do is I'd keep her away until it's safe.
Well, yeah, there you go.
Hey guys, have you ever wondered what happened to the legendary Chuck Norris? I saw a video he made and I was shocked. He is in his 80s. Still kicking butt, working out, staying active. He looks like he's got more energy, can work out longer, even has plenty of that energy left over for his grandkids, and he did this by making one change. He said that he still feels like he's in his 50s. His wife even started doing this thing too. She's never felt better. She says she feels 10 years younger, her body looks leaner, has energy all day. And Chuck's made a 20-minute video explaining step by step how anyone can do this same thing to see incredible changes in their health. Staying active is important. Moving around keeps you feeling good. Making sure that you take care of your gut health, your digestion, just overall, is also very important. Right now, you can go to mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Watch Chuck's video right now. That's mymorningkick.com/Fightful. Check out what Chuck Norris has to say. What's got him feeling so good these days? He explains everything, and you won't believe how simple it is.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
That's all I got, you know, keep her away.
I think she was very solid. I'd seen her wrestle on indie shows. She took to wrestling very, very quickly. She's still very fresh as far as her experience goes. I think that when she ended up on AEW, I think it was clear that she wasn't quite ready to wrestle for a television crowd, you know, because that does require a certain amount of retraining. You can't do the same things that you do during an indie show, so on and so forth. And I think that might have exposed a couple of things, but I thought she's always been very solid, one of the stronger women that they have as well. Bummed out that she got injured. Hopefully she will be able to come back very, very soon. Folks, like this video, share it out. We're still taking super chats. We're going to take them all throughout our discussion right now of NXT. Alex, before we start, I want to get your thoughts on the Capitol Wrestling Center that debuted at TakeOver this weekend. What do you think about the setup?
I really like the sheer wall mm-hmm. of screens as opposed to the tiered thing at the Amway Center. I think it looks very, very cool and futuristic, like a gladiator arena in the year 3000, where nobody ever actually leaves their homes, but you're all like, you buy a ticket to sit in one of the screens. It's a cool look. I like that. I think the chain link and the plexiglass mm-hmm. thing, that's a kind of interesting idea. I don't know. Like, everybody's trying to figure out what we're going to do here. Like, apparently the governor of Florida says everybody can fill a whole arena. The Miami Dolphins can play in front of 65,000 fans this week. And Miami Dolphins are like, yeah, we don't want our fans to die of a terrible disease, so we're good. But who knows what Vince is going to do. Yeah, so, you know, like, up until that point, up until we get all fans there, everyone's trying something new of how to, like, present fans actually being there without actually being there, unless you're AEW, who just says, yeah, fuck it, come on in, and we'll socially distance you, and everybody wear a mask, and we'll all be safe, and as much as we can in times like this. But it's different. I like it better than what they were doing before, I'll say that.
Well, I think the setup is really good, and you know what I really appreciate? What I really like is how it's lit. It's not as... Mm-hmm. You know, pristine and sharp as it is on the two major shows. It kind of feels, you know, it feels indie super show. It feels more like what NXT should feel like. You know,
yes.
No lasers, no like these mind melting light arrangements. It feels a lot more, you know, there's a lot more smoke machine as well involved. It feels a little grittier, probably the look they were trying to go for with Raw Underground, but
yeah,
they're moving it on over here. Hey, well, what a way to kick off the evening, man. Tommaso Ciampa versus Kushida. There's back and forth, obviously, to start this one off until Kushida hits a drop kick and some kicks. I love the spot where Kushida goes for a flip. He does a handstand, and Ciampa's just right there, and basement drop kicks the arm so that he falls. I loved that spot. Ciampa then starts to pick Kushida apart, grounds him with submissions, hits a neck breaker. He dictates the pace for the better part of the match until Kushida hits a German suplex and a kick, tries to go for an arm breaker. Ciampa breaks out of it with a power bomb. They trade some strikes. Kushida then starts stomping Ciampa, but you'll notice that he was stomping him on the back of the neck, which adds to this new vicious Kushida. Goes for the hoverboard lock, but that all comes, Ciampa tries to fight out, and that all comes to an end when Velveteen Dream interferes, jumps off the top rope to break the hoverboard. Actually, he ends up hurting Ciampa more as it all gets broken apart. But Kushida chases him off. What'd you think of the match? And then what did you think of the post-match angle?
Oh, this was totally unexpected. I did not think, I will not wake up today saying, you know what, I assume I will get tonight is Kushida versus Tommaso Ciampa on TV. So that's great. The match was, I expected them to do like a thing they did with like Keith Lee and Braun Strowman the other night. We're like, these two guys just cannot be contained. We're going to do this match again next week. And no, they full on gave us a whole match. And somehow also was able to protecting everybody. Ciampa and Kushida can have this match over and over and over again, as far as I'm concerned. This was great. The attack at the end, where Dream attacked and hit Ciampa, but Ciampa was given the disqualification because everybody knew he meant to hit Kushida, was interesting. And I did love the touch of Ciampa being pissed that it ended that way. He did not want to win by DQ. He did not give up. He did not intend to give up inside the hoverboard lock. He thought he was going to win that match versus Kushida, which is a great thing. Not like him going, yeah, I beat you because a fellow heel helped me out. Like, no, he hates Velveteen Dream too. And I can't wait for next week when Tommaso Ciampa dismembers Velveteen Dream. That's going to be great too. This was all very good for me.
Can I just say that I think it's they missed a good opportunity here to keep Dream off of TV. Yes. They wrote him off with an injury, and they missed a good opportunity keep him off TV. Maybe let the fires cool a little bit. Maybe even move him over to the main roster. But it appears he's still safely nestled inside NXT.
They like the controversy it creates. Heat, Robert. That's the most important thing in all of wrestling. Heat.
I like heat too, but I'm not trying to stick my arm inside an oven. You know what I mean? Like,
I hate it. I hate it as well. But they're putting him on because it's going to create controversy among their most loyal fans. And for the casuals who turn in, they have no idea what the hell Velveteen Dream is accused of, or even if he is accused of anything. They're just watching a TV show. So it doesn't matter to them. It's a weird thing. But the Dream thing is horrible. And yet, I feel like we're just going to have to suffer through it for a while longer.
Well, Triple H told us that these are immature decisions that he made, right? They're just they're immature decisions.
Right. No, yeah.
So I wrote that. And like... I immediately felt like, oh God, this is going to get some serious backlash, but it felt like a father trying to protect his son. Like, hey, my son did a bad thing, but he's not a bad kid. He's just confused.
Yeah.
And they left it at that. And it is what it is, because I guess they're going to get, they're going to do whatever they want anyway.
Boys will be boys. In this case, men will do boys.
Oh.
Anakin JMT left us a super chat. Thank you very much again, Anakin. Says, as sad that Dream has gone from thoroughly entertaining to a cold, wet fart. Well, you know, I sort of said it last week, right? It's WWE knows we know, but they don't want us to know that we know, but they know we know. So they're going to let us kind of know that they know without telling us they know. Yeah. That's why they're dialing them back. Donovan Dijak wants to eat pie. Left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Donovan. There's a theme this evening. I see Warren doing a Kamala Harris impression here. I am not even going to try that.
Nope.
Not even remotely. But thank you very much, because it'll probably get me into trouble. Thank you very much for the super chat. Not that I don't like Kamala Harris. It's just, yeah, no, I'm not going to even try to remotely entertain that. Aaron Entertainment left us a super chat. Thank you very much. He says that the women's division is too stacked on the face side. Well, there are a lot of faces. We saw a couple of faces come together tonight as a team, as Ember Moon graced us with her presence after her surprise return on Sunday evening. And I just, straight off the bat, Alex, you know, she got the reception from the extras in the crowd. That's fine. She got the WWE 2K18 heat cranked up to the max. Imagine, though, if she had returned to the Full Sail crowd.
My God. The we'd still be hearing the pop echoing off the mountains over yonder. Yes. Like, it's there are a lot of things that we missed out, like actual reactions from the crowd. And it's a weird thing because I feel like if you actually turned up the mics on the Full Sail fans at the Capitol Wrestling Center, they would actually create the response that you want, as opposed to piping in this ambient crowd noise. It's not good.
She says she's shocked they're letting her talk tonight. It's been a long 14 months, but she says she's found clarity in establishing Ember's Law, which is corny, she admits. But basically, Ember's Law is, no one is going to tell me what to do. I get to do what I want to do. Damn it. Her delivery was priceless on that. That cut brings out Io Shirai, who hits the ring. But before anything happens there, Rhea Ripley comes out. She starts to cut a promo, but she gets mugged by Raquel Gonzalez. And Dakota Kai is there as well. Ember Moon rushes in to take out Dakota. As Io just flips her hair in the ring and looks on. Damn, I love myself a smart champion, Alex.
Oh, yeah. And she says later in the interview, like, that's not my problem. Exactly. This is my problem, patting the championship belt. I think that's smart. I like that Io just stays firmly in the middle. She's not neither face nor heel. She's just Io. I think that's a great way to be for her. It works for her perfectly. That's what's so great is she can face either baby faces or heels and just be Io, and it doesn't matter. She's just going to be her. That's good. I liked all this. I thought that, you know, Ember coming out and basically saying, like, you know, I'm back and I want that gold. That's great. Because the thing about her is that the thing I really think that they had a huge misstep during her time in NXT, they should have just had her beat Asuka.
Mm-hmm.
Like, having Asuka then, like, go up the main roster while injured and bequeath the title to Ember, and Ember basically, I mean, I'm assuming she defended it on TV at some point, but I remember, in my brain, it's the first time that she defended it on a takeover, she lost it. So, like, she never actually won the title. She didn't actually really, she was never really a champion. She was a vessel to get the title from Asuka to Shayna Baszler. Like, that was all she was, and that was not what she deserved. She was so much better than that in NXT.
If memory serves me correctly, I think she defended it twice against... She probably had some TV defenses, but she defended it twice against Shayna. And the first match... She rolls her up by rolling her up, she got the stupid roll-up thing
that Shayna never should succumb to.
But at the second takeover that she fought Shayna, that's where she lost.
So she defended it once, and they had her win cheesily, not strong, and then she lost it. She deserved better than that, deserved far better than the way she was treated on the main roster. Oh. Including, like, we need to talk about this, she almost ended her career because they were like, hey, you, person who doesn't matter, join the string of jobbers chasing after R-Truth. And then she slips in some water and nearly ends her career because they thought that she was the same as, I don't know, Drake Maverick, not to say anything but slander his name because he's great now, but at the time, and I don't know, Mojo Rawley and Eric Young. Like, that was, she was just there. So let's just do this. It's amazing that she's back. She looks great. We'll talk about the match later. She looks great in the match. I'm so happy that she is back. And also, the women's division is stacked at the top. I mean, as far as, like, heavy in the face side, sure. But, like, EO proves you can do whatever you want. Like, you can be whatever you want in that division because it's just going to produce great matches. All the women who are at the top of that division are so, so great in the ring.
I think what Aaron Entertainment in his Super Chat meant was star power wise. You know, with Ember, and Rhea being your figureheads here. Mm-hmm. Who else on the heel side has that type of attraction? Even Shotzi on top of this. You can add Shotzi to that trio there.
I guess when I look at that group, I don't look at them and say, you really need a really strong heel in that division to make it work. Like, if Shayna was still around, would it be better? I guess. But, like, it's just a bunch of amazing women who have all have their sights set on the title. Sure. And you could make me believe that any one of them is primed to take that title from Io with, like, 2 weeks worth of work. It's great. They're all in perfect position.
Later on, we do get a promo with Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez calling out Rhea and Ember Moon. We'll talk about the match at the end of the review because I think that's the spot it deserves.
Yes.
Drake Maverick has another promo where I'm arriving with my suitcase. And he says that he's been sending messages about ideas and entrance music ideas to Killian Dane because he's got big ideas in the pipeline for their tag team. And Killian Dane approaches him and says, what are you talking about? We're not doing it. We're not a tag team. We're not friends. We're not even a tag team. But Drake informs him, we have a match with Ever-Rise this evening. And Dane gets...
This would be a lot easier if you would just give me your number so I could,
so
text,
I could text you.
It was just so sweet. Like, this would be a lot easier for everybody if you just give me your number and I could text you this kind of stuff.
I love how Dane just went... You know, he wants to strangle him. He's like, week after week, I keep punching you in the mouth and you keep coming back.
This is not working.
What do I have to do? Let's talk about the match then, where Drake Maverick and Killian Dane defeated Ever-Rise. They come out with the theme song, Alex.
The theme song, man. It's like, it's they come out and the Tron is all lit up, all sweet and everything. And Drake Maverick could not be happier to be there. Dane doesn't know what world he exists in. How did I let this happen to me? Don't you remember a few years ago, I was a wrecking machine in a War Games match. What has happened to me? And what has happened to you, Killian, is that you are in one of the greatest tag team angles that NXT has ever had. I'm telling you, you just don't know it yet. That theme song is so damn catchy. I wish I could whistle better, so I'm going to have to hum it. Dee dee doo doo, dee dee doo doo, dee dee doo doo, doo doo doo, doo doo doo. Like, that's fantastic. It's just so upbeat. And to have Rick Maverick dancing out to it down the ramp while Killian Dane hates his life in the background, it's just frigging amazing. And then the match is fun too. Like, Ever-Rises are perfect foils for this thing. They're never going to win this match. Who cares? But they're great hands, and they're great to actually be there and put over all of that crap. Not disparaging them by calling them great hands. You need somebody there who you know is never going to be in danger of winning the match, but who's always going to make everything that's happening in the match look great, and they did.
I like... how they incorporate this dynamic, you know, between Drake and Dane into the match as well, but without making it, it works. You know, smartly thought out angles that can pass off as comedy without being a full blown comedy match. You know, like they start to argue when Dane goes for a Vader bomb. Chase rolls Drake up before Dane can break it up as well. Dane then power bombs Drake onto Chase for the pin and win. And Drake dances after the match, but Dane just smacks him one on the chin again. He goes to leave, but his Northern Ireland heart, Alex, is melting. It's getting softer. Because instead of just leaving him there, he drags him out of the ring, plops him on top of his shoulder, and carries him away as Drake gives us the thumbs up. We were talking about this before coming on the air. They're letting Drake Maverick be Rockstar Spud. They're letting him be Rockstar Spud, and he is shining in ways he hasn't shined before in WWE. This is going to work, Alex, because Drake Maverick is perfect for this.
Listen, here's the thing about Drake Maverick, about Mr. Rockstar Spud. What an amazing run this past few years have been. Like, as the actual serious general manager of 205 Live, he presided over the best run in that show's history to me. Like, that tournament to be the new champion after Enzo left, like, and him presiding over all of it was like with the Mustafa Ali and Cedric Alexander thing, with Buddy Murphy, all of that was, he was so great as that thing. There were missteps along the way, but he tried to make it work where he was managing AOP. That wasn't his fault. That was terrible writing. Like being in the 24/7 title picture, and you know, like he can't consummate with his wife unless he's wearing the title belt. That wasn't my deal of comedy, but I know a lot of people who loved that kind of stuff. Good for him. The thing where he got fired and turned it into a cool run in the cruiserweight title tournament, but we all know he wasn't actually going to be a part of the cruiserweight title picture. So what does he do? He finds Killian Dane and creates gold in the tag division. A tag division, by the way, that is in complete shambles, because this whole thing, remember a few weeks ago where they had the weird singles thing where two members of each team had a tag match, and Birch and Strong won that match, and they were supposed to then have a match against each other to then see whose team would face Breezango, but that singles match still hasn't happened, and Danny Birch is in a thing with Ridge Holland tonight, and Strong appears to be healthy, so I don't know why they haven't done that match yet, but maybe it's because Breezango is indisposed. We don't know, but they're not mentioning it, so it's just weird. Killian Dane and Drake Maverick can be an amazing pair in that tag division that we'll want to see win and want to see win. And when they finally do, and it happens not by Drake Maverick being powerbombed onto somebody, but by Drake Maverick saving Killian Dane from certain defeat and winning the match on his own, what an amazing reaction that's going to get from, you know, the people who are in a sheer face of LED screens. But still, what an amazing reaction.
I'm digging this a lot. And it's funny because they got us to care about the eternal question, how will they ever get along? They got us to care about it, Alex.
Well, the whole thing this theme song, and I don't want to ruin this for you, Alex, so I want to tread lightly here. But do you guys remember maybe 15 years ago, there were these commercials for these dick pills with Smilin' Bob?
Yes, I remember Smilin' Bob. Yes, I do.
The whistling sounds like it's that song.
I don't remember
Smilin' really
Bob.
It really
does. So it doesn't ruin anything for me. As far as I know, you're making this whole thing up. The whistling is the greatest. I will say that I despise will they get along when it is a question asked in earnest. Like, oh my God, will they get along? It is incredibly vitally important that these two horrible enemies get along in this tag match they were thrown into. No, it's not. It's stupid. But in this case, when it's done for laughs, it's great. It's great. You're playing against all those tropes and it works.
Anakin JMT left us a super chat. Thank you very much, Anakin, saying a takeover Philly, Ember countered cross arm breaker into a pin on Shayna Baszler. Thank you for that, Anakin. We appreciate it. Donovan Dijak wants to eat a pie. Left us a super chat as well. Thank you very much. Says Dane needs Robert Stone to handle his schedule. Could you imagine? And Killian Dane has all the losers, you know, like the pencil neck losers all suddenly orbiting around him to sort of, that'd be fantastic.
One of the, honestly, like, and I don't think it's his fault because I think he's talented. One of the greatest things to happen recently on NXT is the lack of Robert Stone.
Right.
Like, it's just, it never worked. Even when he was getting run over by tanks. The first time he got run over by a tank, funny. The sixth time he got run over by a tank, not funny.
I agree. We have Toni Storm cutting a promo from Cancun, Mexico, which is where she went to hang out, preparing for her return. Recapping winning the Mae Young Classic, the NXT UK title, and so on and so forth. She says we're going to see a Toni Storm we've never seen before. Okay, cool.
And perhaps that means that she's going to be your top heel in the division. Who knows? Like, she we don't know her here, so she could come and turn on somebody, and all of a sudden now we got a heel in your division.
Kind of hoping she comes back with a Blues Brothers gimmick like her boyfriend Juice Robinson is doing right now in New Japan. That'd be funny. Johnny Gargano and Candice LeRae are walking their dog and they have his and her track suits.
Good, good.
I laughed. It had me chuckling out loud. They're embarrassed over their takeover losses. They get back home and there's a huge TV screen there. Candace says, Indy Hartwell. And Johnny goes, Indy Hartwell? Why are we talking about that goof? What is she ever going to amount to? Candace says, no, Indy Hartwell just bought us a 65-inch television. Johnny says, I've always loved Indy Hartwell. What? She's so great. A little later on in the evening, we see them watching footage that was left on a USB drive of the Battle Royal, where we're highlighting all the times Indy Hartwell saved Candace in the Battle Royal. And now they're sort of like, oh, well, there's interesting. They're setting a seed here. Alex, is this long-term storytelling? Did they really set this in the Battle Royal to saying, we're going to use this in 4 weeks after a takeover? Because 4 weeks is long-term storytelling for WWE.
It certainly is. I mean, in Battles Royale, because I believe that's the correct plural.
It's not Battle Royale.
Battle Royal. No, it's Battles Royal. Okay. But most of the time in WWE, you have everyone's trying to dump everybody out. Every woman for herself. To actually have, like, specifically Indy Hartwell save Candice LeRae several times seems like either she's not doing her job right in the Battle Royal, or they planned it out. And if so, like, this seems like an angle you could do. Like, it's also the angle of her replacing their television. Like, that's also a thing that has been planted in a while. Yep. Like, and do I think that in NXT, Candice LeRae and Johnny Gargano have the power to be like, here's what we're going to do with this little angle? And William Regal would be like, yeah, that's good. Or not Regal or Triple H or whoever sure. It is who's like putting everything together. Like, yes, that makes sense. That's fun. Because it does feel like it's not a team of writers that came up with this, but like people who know each other and figure out this will be fun. But the touch of, here's a TV. I know you guys need a TV. And Johnny Gargano saying, how do you come in here? There was a USB drive left in the television. What a great little weird spy movie angle thing. Like, here's a TV for free, but also here's this spy.
Very cloak and
USB drive in there. It's very cool. I thought that was great. I don't know what they're planning, but I like people volunteering to join the Gargano way. I think that's sure. cool. A lot of people were like, well, I guess Johnny and Candice are being called up because they both lost a takeover. I mean, I don't know why you would think that. Those two seem like NXT lifers. If they're going to be there and not in the title picture, then there's a lot of cool ways you can use them. This might be one of them.
Austin Theory defeated Leon Ruff. That's not the story here. However, I will point out that at some point, I think Leon Ruff does some top rope jumpy stuff, and he seems to flub one of them, sort of messes up. And Theory just rushes in to pick him up, like just rushes in to grab him off of the botch and just hits the ATL for the win. I don't know if it was a planned botch or not, but if it wasn't, kudos to Theory, because he really did save that situation right there. But the story here is that he got another match. He calls himself the future of NXT and so on and so forth in a promo after. And that brings out Dexter Lumis, our favorite serial killer, who comes in and unloads on Austin Theory. Hits a Thez Press, a Bulldog. Theory does get some offense in as well. Hits a standing moonsault. Lumis gets a spine buster and a slingshot suplex as well. But it all comes to a crashing halt when he locks the silence in on Theory. Before we get to the post-match shenanigans, what do you think of the match here, Alex?
For one, I thought Leon Ruff should have won that match with Austin Theory. Like, really get the story in that Austin Theory can't beat anybody, because he also thinks so highly of himself, he would take somebody like Leon Ruff totally lightly, and Leon Ruff could get a flash win on him. Obviously, that's not what they did, but I thought some of the things that Ruff did were impressive, even though he did have that botch. The storyline of him, like, you know, being too big for his britches, I think works. Dexter Lumis also, I think he and Kushida could have a tag team, where they just go out and just try to destroy people who are a little too liberal with the children. But I thought this was really good. Good to see Dexter Lumis back. He's so captivating, man. I have no idea what you actually do with him because, again, I don't think I've actually ever heard him speak. Mm-hmm. So who knows what his ceiling actually is, but what a captivating presence he has. So yeah, this was great. Cameron Grimes done messed with the wrong dude. That man will tie you up upside down and feed you your hat. Like, you do not want to mess with Dexter Lumis, Cameron Grimes.
Because Cameron Grimes, after the match, came out of nowhere with the cave-in. My boy Grimesy, he's going to the moon, Alex. That's all I have to say. He's going to the moon. So clearly they're setting that one up.
He's going to a room behind a false wall in Dexter Lumis's basement. That's where he's going.
We get a recap of the main event from TakeOver, with Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly. Obviously we all know by now that, we all know that Finn Balor broke his jaw. No word on what's happening with the title yet. But my God, if our boy Finn Balor isn't cursed when it comes to, holding titles, I don't know who is. We even get the Undisputed Era together. They're telling Kyle O'Reilly to not be ashamed for what happened, for not winning this Sunday at TakeOver. It was a great match, and it really was. Adam Cole says that he doesn't know why Ridge attacked him, but he's not done with the Undisputed Era. He'll find out why. And then we see Ridge Holland arriving in a Mercedes to be interviewed. And as he comes out, he's asked by the interview, why'd you attack Adam Cole? He says, I didn't come in a Mercedes last week, but I do today. And you can thank Adam Cole for that. Now, before we actually get into what happened, I think they had an interesting thing here going with Ridge Holland, the guy who likes to inflict pain, actually being a hired gun to take out other dudes.
Yeah. Hired, you say hired gun, I say hired goon. It was a perfect spot for him. Like, I thought you had a really cool idea for, like, who is paying Ridge Holland to take out NXT superstars. That could have been a thing that was going on for a long time, and it could have been a really fun reveal. You don't even need to know who it is now. Like, you had no idea, let's say, a week ago that Mustafa Ali was behind Retribution. Mm-hmm. You could have no idea right now who's paying Ridge Holland to take out people, but that's a cool storyline that could have, you know, could have lasted a long time. But the other thing I will say is when Finn took that running, jumping knee from Kyle O'Reilly in that match, and immediately his hand went to his jaw, and then his face looked like he had been stung by 100 bees after the match. I was like, that's not good. However, it's a weird thing that you were like, his jaw's broken in two places. He'll be fine. He's just going to take a little time off. No problem. But Karrion Kross, separated shoulder, immediately gives up the title. Like, you got to have like a thing where, like, if a guy's injured and is going to miss some time, do you have to take the title off him or not? You got to be consistent about it, I think. Also, isn't that the same thing that happened to Drew McIntyre in kayfabe when Randy Orton kicked him? He got his jaw broken two places, but he kept wrestling matches. Like, if an actual injury happens to somebody that takes him out of the thing, you can't kayfabe that same injury and have it be fine. Come up with something that, like, wouldn't actually take a guy out for several weeks to give your guy if you're going to lie about it. Anyway, the Adam Cole backstage with he's wearing the sunglasses, he's all bruised up, you know, his promo to Ridge Holland and everything. That was all very interesting. And I can't help but wonder what we would have gotten had we not seen happen what happened later in the night.
Well, let's talk about it. It happened during a match between Danny Burch and Ridge Holland, which I nonetheless got excited about because I think Danny Burch and Ridge Holland worked well together. It's a slugfest. Burch hits a missile dropkick, and he hits a German suplex after clotheslining Holland. But Holland comes back, hits the Northern Grid out of nowhere for the win. After the match, Birch stands up to Ridge. Ridge and he slaps Holland across the face. Ridge then attacks Birch and then starts headbutting him repeatedly. So Oney Lorcan, Danny Birch's brother-in-arms, runs out to defend him. He gets beat up as well. However, Oney goes for a spinning tope off the top rope to the floor. And we saw the moment here on Twitter. A lot of people were replaying it. We have screenshots. Ridge caught, of course, Oney Lorcan, but he twisted his ankle in an angle that you're not supposed to. That looked horrendous. They keep fighting out on the floor, but Ridge gets stretchered out and kind of thought it was an angle, but it ain't. Ridge Holland is injured. His ankle is, I think he must have, I think all his ligaments are gone at this point. That was a bad injury, Alex.
They put him in an air cast, and that's usually a broken bone thing. So it's possible that he the whole thing, just his leg just snapped. When I saw him catch Oney, I was like, you gotta widen your stance when you're going to catch a man falling at you. Even though you're a big dude, Ridge Holland, and you're super strong, you got to widen your stance when that's going to happen. And it's one of those things where, like, they did when Ridge Holland attacks Adam Cole at the end of TakeOver, I think to myself, like, I don't know if Ridge Holland is ready for this spot at the top of NXT messing with stuff. It's a cool idea, but I don't know. Like, I honestly don't know how long he's been doing this. All they ever talk about is he played rugby for a while, and that's a completely different skill set than wrestling. He's got a great look. He's obviously very strong. He can throw guys around, but there's a lot of things that you learn when you're just starting out, like how wide your feet have to be to take certain moves that maybe he skipped along the way to get here. And I'm not blaming him for it. It's just a weird thing that happened. It's terrible. When I saw his knee buckle, I was like, that really sucks, because they were pushing him to a really cool angle for him. They had done the whole deal with like debuting him and all those vignettes again of him running over people while carrying a rugby ball. It's just a giant waste, and they have really bad luck with injuries in NXT. And you always hear about guys losing their spot to injuries, and how that's not supposed to happen, but yet it always does. I can't help but wonder what the plans were for him going forward, and then what they could be now. Like, the hired goon is a major part of this storyline, that when you excise him from it, you know, it's nothing. And it's, again, it wasn't even in a match that actually furthered that storyline. It was just him beating up a guy, and next week he was going to beat up Oney Lorcan in a match, I'm sure. And now that's got to be put on hold, and it's terrible for Ridge Holland.
Donovan Dijak wants...
I feel like...
Go ahead, Robert.
I feel like, first of all, best of luck to him. I hope it's not too bad. But if you're NXT right now, in the span of 2 months, you've lost Karrion Kross to injury. You lost Keith Lee to Raw. Balor might be down, but there might not be a takeover. So that might be why they're being a little more lenient with it. And you've got a draft that's going to pluck a few names from NXT. It's not looking like NXT has a strong base right now, and it's a little concerning.
Donovan Dijak wants to eat pie, left us a super chat. Thank you again. Says, see if you get the reference here, but the Kushida Loomis tag team should be called the Aliens. Help me out, Alex.
Time Splitter.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Loomis.
We're stumped. Donovan Dijak wants to eat.
Didn't know I was gonna have to solve riddles here.
we get Damian Priest backstage wondering who the next man is up for his title. We get also another Thatcher vignette, you know, the guy who loses all his matches, but he says that he's not defined by his losses, but rather the everlasting pain he inflicts. Okay.
I did like that he's like, you can't let those things define you, and I'm not going to let it define me. I'm not going to let it define me. I'm not going to let it define me. Like, okay, I appreciate that it seems to be actually affecting him, the fact that he goes into these things. Because usually, like, guys are like, I come in and I'm going to beat you. I'm going to beat you. Then they lose. And the next week they cut the same promo. At least he's allowing these losses to affect him in some way. I just hope that actually translates in the ring and that gets him to a place where he's starting to win matches.
Halloween Havoc version of Shotzi Blackheart defeated Xia Li in a short match. Nothing much here to say. Shotzi won with the top rope senton. But after the match, Xia Li gets a letter from fellow Chinese wrestler Boa, and she's distressed at reading the letter, and she walks backstage. Alex, do you think the party is disappointed in her performance? I'm ready for anything in WWE.
I don't know. Here's the thing. Like, if this was main roster, I would half expect them to like have her start. Now she's involved with the ninjas because Akira Tozawa is Japanese and she's Chinese. But isn't that all the same? According to Vince, probably. Don't they all eat the same food? Like, it's a horrible thing that they have the other Chinese guy on the roster come out with an envelope and there's like Chinese figures scrawled on it. Like, I don't know. Like, we'll have to see where this goes, but I'm not optimistic about it being good, you know?
Yes.
Like,
or tasteful.
I'm not.
At least they're using Boa. You know, that's a guy who's been
who was in that tournament like a year ago, and then nothing. So
well,
he
got injured, if I'm not mistaken. He got hurt.
Okay.
Rhea Ripley and Ember Moon defeated Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez. Ember Moon comes out to brand new music, and she goes right after Kai with a suplex. She tries to run Arena, but it's so hard not to call her Reina Gonzalez. I'm sorry. It's such a better name.
It really is.
She tries to Reina Gonzalez, but instead, Raquel blocks it. And instead, she hits a single leg lariat. Met Ember's suicide dive to Dakota on the floor was insane. She just flew like a missile. She clearly... She was like, nah, I haven't done this in such a long while. I'm just going to see how far I can go before I have to take some time off again. And that was followed immediately by a somersault senton off the apron by Rhea Ripley. That was a pretty cool spot. We go to commercial. When we come back, Raquel has Rhea in like an inverted carried stretch. And I could not but just be amazed at it. Because, yeah, Raquel is a tall, powerful lady, but so is Rhea. It was an impressive sight to see. Ember does a grounded flatliner on Raquel and a beautiful second rope. A lung blower on Dakota. The heels double team Ember. Raquel just like, she swings her around with just one arm. Gonzalez is just so, so strong. And she accidentally drives. Rhea is actually... accidentally drives Raquel into the commentary table because of a kick by Dakota Kai, and Ember Moon eclipses Dakota Kai for the win. I miss the eclipse, Alex. This was a good, strong, fast-paced main event. This was very good stuff.
Yeah, it was great. All these women are very, very good. I think Raquel is improving every time I see her in the ring. Dakota Kai is excellent, but like Rhea and Ember, like when they had that thing where they both went to the outside and then they had that little low five moment as they walked past each other, I was like, ooh, do I need to see them at some point, Ember and Rhea versus anybody who has the women's tag belts? Like I was gonna say Shayna and Nia, but I feel like they're not long for that championship. I feel like they're gonna break them up. But like Rhea and Ember look great together. Like, and they're a perfect combination. Like, they, you could absolutely see Ember like jumping off of Rhea's shoulders onto people and doing stuff. Be a lot of fun. I missed the Eclipse so much, and this was a picture perfect one. I hope they never ever take that move from her, like, in any way. Like, it's like, because like you got to take that right, and Dakota crumpled. That looked so good when she took it. I thought this whole thing was really well done. It announces Ember as being back for real
and strong
and very strong. I really missed her. Like, it was no secret of how much I loved her and wanted the best for her on the main roster, and they never gave it to her. They got her one damn title match versus Bayley, and then she was one and done. Zelina Vega gets multiple title matches, but Ember's one and done. So, like, I'm so happy that she's back in the right place for her, the place that truly loves her, that will welcome her, and I can't wait to see what she does down in NXT again.
Same here. And at the end of the match, the babyfaces shake hands and stand tall in the ring. Aaron Entertainment left us a super chat. Thank you again, Aaron, saying, I did think Rhea was going to turn on Ember, because yeah, it did feel a little stretched out.
I'm not so sure that's not the end game here, but it would be early.
It would have been
early. Like, I think it might be a thing where like Rhea helps Ember to, you know, throughout this whole thing, Ember gets the title match, but is able to beat Io when Rhea couldn't. And Rhea is like, nah, I'm not your friend now. Now I'm taking that title off of you. I think that there's a way of doing that.
There you have it, folks. That was our NXT recap. And this is how we're going to wrap up tonight's episode of the Wednesday Night Wars podcast. I want to thank everyone for joining us this evening. Everyone who liked the video, shared it out. Hey, there's still time to like the video if you want. Just like there's still time for Robert DeFelice to let us know where we can find him on social media.
Yes, you can follow me on Twitter @DudeFelice. Check out everything I'm doing over at SmartGoutMoment.com, WrestleZone.com, and of course here on the weekends for Fightful. And yeah, looking forward to doing this again next week and every week until the end of time, which is like 5 weeks from now.
I was going to say, when's the election in the U.S.? Alex, what about you? Where can people follow you and your work?
You can follow me at Alex Sour Graps on the Twitter. I'm on Fightful Select doing Sour Graps about Raw and SmackDown. The draft, people. It's feeling drafty in here. We're going to get some draft reactions. My SmackDown show on Sunday, on Saturday night, and my Raw reaction show on Tuesday night. And I will just leave it while saying this. Dee, dee, doo, doo. Dee, dee, doo, doo.
And you can follow me at Mr. Warren Hayes on Twitter or at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Mr. Warren Hayes. I do a show every Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern. Come and join me tomorrow. It'll be a good time. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. Subscribe to Fightful Select. Subscribe to Fightful Select.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.